International.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners, and happy Friday. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the January 8th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. With Japan's capital under a COVID-19 state of emergency, this year's Tokyo Games certainly look in doubt right now. The Olympics are scheduled to start in just over 6 months on July 23rd. Japan's Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga declared the state of emergency Thursday. At a news conference, he said, and I quote, "This global infectious disease has exceeded our imagination, and it's becoming a severe fight. We need to ask people to have a limited lifestyle." The measures include asking restaurants and bars to close early, requesting residents to refrain from non-urgent outings, and limiting attendance at sports and other events to 5,000 people, at least until February 7th. However, the Japanese Prime Minister added, and I quote, "I think it's possible to hold the Olympics because the administering of coronavirus vaccines has begun around the world. I want to start vaccinations in Japan by the end of February. If we take appropriate measures, I think the public feelings toward the Olympics will change." Richard Pound, a senior member of the International Olympic Committee, says he can't be certain the Tokyo Games will come off because, in his words, the ongoing elephant in the room would be the surges in coronavirus cases. Tokyo reported a record 2,447 new cases on Thursday, a 50% increase from the previous day, which was also a record day. The Japanese public certainly has its doubts about the Tokyo Games. A poll of 1,200 people last month by the national broadcaster NHK showed 63% favored another postponement or cancellation. The IOC has said the Tokyo Olympics, first delayed by the coronavirus pandemic in 2020, will not be postponed again and would be canceled if necessary this time.
This is Jonathan McKinstry, the head coach of the Uganda Cranes national team. 2020 has been a challenging year for all of us, not only in Uganda and across Africa, but around the world as we've had to come to terms with the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, with a vaccine being released across the globe, we can finally see light at the end of the tunnel. But it's important that whilst that vaccine is rolled out, that we all remain steadfast and alert and adopt the guidelines that are being given out by the Ministry of Health and our various health authorities to make sure that we keep each other safe and we keep ourselves safe until we can get rid of this pandemic. Good luck and good health to everybody.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we can all help fight the corona pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and nose when we are in crowded places or areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hi, I'm Helen Maroulis, Olympic champion for Team USA, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Egypt's Olympic history spans more than 100 years. The Egyptians first participated at the 1912 Olympics held in Stockholm, Sweden. And the Egyptians have sent athletes to compete in most editions of the Summer Olympics since then. For this year's Tokyo Games, Egypt is planning to send more than 130 athletes who are expected to qualify in more than 20 Olympic sports. To find out more, Iron Mike Mbonye called Cairo, where he reached the Secretary General of the Egyptian Olympic Committee, Sharif Al-Aryan.
Egypt is preparing, as other countries are. We just got out of Corona virus. We had a total lockdown from end of March till beginning of July. We were able to go back to training from July. It appears from March to July, it was all about each athlete on his own training at home, just keeping up with some physical training as much as possible. From July, everything opened again for training, and from September, beginning of September, everything opened in Egypt for local competitions to be back without spectators in most cases. Even up to now, spectators are to a limited amount only. Every federation is by itself training and getting their players ready. We are like in an open camp inside Egypt where players go back home to their families to sleep and back to training in the morning. It's not as intense as it should be. It's going to get more intense starting from 2021 with the remaining events for qualification. We have qualified more than half of our players till now, maybe 60% or more. We have about 90 players qualified till now. We are expecting the biggest qualification ever for Summer Olympics with more than 130 individual players, boys and girls. The percentages are probably going to be around 55 to 60% boys compared to 40 to 45% girls. This is what we expect. We also expect to qualify in around more than 20 Olympic sports. We have already qualified for the team events or the team sports in football and in handball, deservedly by winning the African Championship, first place, football and first place in handball too. Unfortunately, basketball, hockey, and rugby, we were not good enough. Hockey, we lost in the final to South Africa. Basketball, I think in the quarterfinals. Rugby, we're still a new sport in Egypt. We are expecting more than 20 Olympic sports to qualify. To be exact, 23 Olympic sports. I think we are capable of doing that. From those 130 plus players, we actually had a plan 3 years ago where we had this in mind to beat the last record, which was in Rio, 121 athletes. So we are on our way to beat that record. And we have more players who are able to compete for medals with chances, with real chances. But those chances vary from 50% chance to 1 or 2% chance. But we have prepared the list 3 years ago, as I said, with the names of players and the federations that have a chance. We have about 10 federations that have chances. It differs, of course, with about around 20 players who have chances. 20 players in statistics for us makes 5 medals. So if we do have 20 players who have chances, we think we can reach 5 medals in total. And that would be great. In Rio, we got 3. We had a target of 5 also. We were struck, of course, by the banning of weightlifting. Okay, for us for 2 years for doping allegations. And we are still battling it in court in the CAS. But if we don't win it, there's 2 medals, a boy and a girl, Mohamed Iheb and Sarah Samir. Actually, good chances will be lost, and it will be a blow for our medal count. But we are pushing in every federation to reach the maximum possible.
When do you plan to start camping for the games? Are you going to do it at home or abroad?
As for planning for camping, as I said before, each federation is different than the other. The main camps will surely be in July, just before the Olympics, whether people are going to Japan or Korea, or depends on the sport, of course, Okay, but these are the camps that we have in mind. We have some other federations where still World Championships and World Cups and final World Cups are still to be played. So there will be some camps before it. I don't think we have time for very long camps this time. And I don't think it's very recommended. Till now, we have problems with traveling and having to do PCRs when you're traveling and then when we're coming back. And still the issue of COVID-19 is not totally finished. So we're waiting to see how the World Cup for handball is going to go. We hope everything goes well. Everything is prepared well here in Egypt. It starts on the 30th till the 31st of Jan. Hopefully even Dr. Thomas Bach, president of IOC, will attend the final. If this competition goes as planned and with no issues, especially with the COVID-19, I think everything, all the sports in the world will continue and this COVID-19 will be forgotten forever.
That's Sharif Al-Aryan, the Secretary General of the Egyptian Olympic Committee, and he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Cairo, Egypt. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Hi, this is Tatiana McFadden, 17-time Paralympic medalist, 7-time gold medalist, 17-time marathon champion, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on Voice of America.
The energetic Andy Edwards spoke recently with Roger Robinson, an author and scholar who has been reporting on international athletics for more than 50 years. Roger's latest book, When Running Made History, takes readers on a globe-trotting tour that includes vivid personal memories. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, Roger tells Andy he's met some fascinating African athletes over the years, including a 2-time London Marathon champion from Ethiopia.
I've met some of the most interesting and admirable people of my life, working in this job and interviewing people like that. And Tsege Kebede from Ethiopia, for instance, one of the funniest guys I've ever met. He talks about, he just finds it so funny that he rose from abject poverty and now he's a VIP runner earning thousands of dollars.
I remember those stories, Tsege Kebede, and I'm sure he's not the only one, saying his, as a boy, the way he started training without realizing he was training was that his father was saying, go out and collect firewood. We have to make a fire to boil the water so we can cook the food for breakfast. So his early morning run. And I think that's an interesting factor. I'm interested in your thoughts about that. I've met quite a lot of African talented runners, elite runners, who say, I've been training for 3 years. And then after a while, you realize they mean I've been in a running camp for 2 or 3 years, or I've been joining a group. And I remember Jeffrey Rono in Prague, and he'd done well in the marathon or half marathon. And he said, I come from a polygamous family, and I only now realize that I've been training, running, for many years as a boy, but we didn't think it was training. My father would say to us boys, take this herd of cattle to the village way over there, and that could be 20 miles, collect another herd of cattle from Uncle so-and-so and bring it back. And Jeffrey said, we were doing a marathon, trotting along with the cattle, but we weren't burnt out mentally because it wasn't like turn up at the track for a session.
We regard it as exceptional now, but in fact, it's only in this generation that our society has become so appallingly dependent on machines, technology, and especially the motor car. For instance, I'm older than you are, Andy, but in my boyhood, I used to run up a steep hill to go to school every morning. And the reason I ran was that I was given the bus fare, but I was trying to save to buy a bicycle. And the penny for the bus fare I would save. And so I was running from Rains Park Station up to the top of the hill on Wimbledon Common and then back down again in the evening. And we just took that for granted at that stage. Now it's changed. Now in Western society, the kids all get taken to school by car and their health suffers seriously. And it's quite right that we look at the African runners and say they are living a more natural life than most people in Western society do. That's where running, I think, is really important within Western society, because we are actually leading. You and I and all the runners are leading a much more natural life because we're going out and exercising hard. And here I am at age 81 with a fracture, trying to recover from a fracture in my leg so I can't run. But I was out today on going up and down flights of steep steps to get some cardiovascular training in. That is unusual among retired professors, I have to admit.
You have a rounded life. Let's just come back to when we talk about the camps, and you've mentioned it both now and in the chapter in your book, the impact on, well, I have to say, Western runners deciding I'm going to go to Kenya, and not just for a week, but this will be part of my regular training, usually winter preparation for the road racing or track season. And we've seen people like Mo Farah from Britain, from New Zealand, the Robertson brothers, Zach and Jake, Dane and Jake, who have been there quite a few years. Well, I presume it must have been quite a cultural change for them. Zake Robertson talks about initially with his brother living in what he described as a concrete cell, a very basic accommodation. There's a lot for them to get used to, but do you think overall they benefit from adjusting to this East African running camp style?
Yeah, this is exactly the process that I was talking about in my book. I mean, it's called When Running Made History, but it's not just history in the sense of major events. It's also history in that we're talking about a complete change in attitude between two cultures, between one that used to be the imperialist dominant culture, and now our people are going to Africa because the East African Africans are really good at something that we admire and like, which is running fast for a long time. They are better at that than anybody has ever been on earth, and so we want to go there and admire it and learn from it. My closest contact is a friend from Scotland. He's actually the son of a friend of mine. And he was Scottish 1500 meter champion and went to Kenya to train, and he knew the Robertsons very well. And he also lived on a concrete floor. And he said to me, you have to live like the Kenyans do in order to get absorbed into their culture and get their motivation to keep working as hard as they do. And he's full of praise of the Kenyan work ethic. He's now created a foundation there, along with a retired Kenyan runner called Gideon Gathimba. And it's called the Gathimba Edwards Foundation. And they are building schools and accommodation. And Miles, the young Scot, has now married a beautiful Kenyan woman, Mary. And currently they're in Aberdeen because the virus has kept them there. But normally they will go back and forth between Aberdeen and Kenya, I think he can. This is what's happening. You've got this wonderful kind of interchange between two cultures. And the mix of a Scottish 1500-meter runner with all that highland ruggedness and a fast altitude-bred Kenyan, is the prospect is terrifying. I'm looking for the Olympics in about, 25 years' time.
Do you think this East African dominance will ever come to an end? And of course, we're not just talking about men. Again, in your book, you chart the progress of the women. I mean, if we've lived long enough, we've all seen the days. I mean, where I live in North London, I moved here 25 years ago, and there were far more men running on Hampstead Heath, a park, but it's more than a park, across the road from me, than women. Now, it's at least 50-50, and I might even say I see more women of varying abilities, but more women running on the heath than men. Will this East African dominance, and we look at the world cross country, but also marathons and road races all over the world, the top prizes are going to, in the men, East Africans, and much of them to the women. Will it come to an end?
It'll come to an end if they all get motor cars. If the standard of living, as we call it, improves in material terms, and the people there become more affluent and lose this contact with the earth that they have, and their need to keep exercising, as we were talking about, from childhood onwards, and leading a more natural life than most people do in the West, that's when it might come to an end. The only other way it would come to an end would be if the economics of running change. as might happen now, because as we now have a sport which depends on very large numbers of people taking part in events at a time when the worst thing you can possibly do is put large numbers of people together. And so our sport, our culture, our industry is taking an enormous economic hit, and the resources, the prize money, the appearance money, the shoe contracts may not be there. And so there may be a lull in Africa. I mean, I hope that doesn't happen. But if the virus continues to be as mismanaged in America and Britain as it has been so far, then things have got to get a lot worse before they get better.
That's Roger Robinson, an author and scholar whose latest book is titled When Running Made History. And Roger was talking with the energetic Andy Edwards.
Sport greetings, everyone. This is Falilat Ogukoya, Olympic silver and bronze medalist, African record holder, ran the best quarter mile in the world, 1998. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sport on Voice of America. Please continue to stay safe and avoid contracting COVID-19.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and the artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
In English Premier League football news, Arsenal manager Mikel Arteta says the future of a star German midfielder could be decided this month. VOA's Gwen Uten joins us now with more details. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Mesut Ozil has not played for Arsenal since March of last year. And with his contract coming to an end this season, Arsenal manager Mikel Arteta told reporters the German midfielder's future with the club is still up in the air.
I don't know what it's going to happen. Obviously, now it's free to negotiate with other clubs. We will discuss internally what's the best situation for him for the near future, and obviously with the player and the agent, and try to find the best solution for everybody.
Ozil is renowned for his technical skill, agility, and creativity on the pitch. And when he joined Arsenal in 2013, he helped the club lift the FA Cup trophy in his first season. Now the 32-year-old is free to negotiate with other clubs and has reportedly attracted interest in Turkey, Asia, and the United States. And Arteta says with the right offer, Ozil will be allowed to leave during January's transfer window.
If something is sorted this month, it's because it's good for both parties, because it's good for Mesut and his future, and because it's good for the club. If that's the case, we will move forward. If it's not the case, then the play will continue here. Decisions have to be made when you have to register or not register players, when you have to play them or not play them all the time. We know that we have a really important player that is one of the key players in the past few seasons for this football club. We have to make a decision. I have to make a decision. I made it. I knew the consequences of it. And now we're going to have to make another one in January. And we will just put in the balance what is the best thing for the club and the best thing for the team, and what the intentions of the players are, and try to find the right solution to it.
Arsenal is scheduled to host their third-round FA Cup match against Newcastle United on Saturday. But amid reports that fellow Premier League side Aston Villa has been hit with a significant coronavirus outbreak that has put their upcoming FA Cup match against Liverpool in jeopardy, Arteta says his squad is exercising an abundance of caution.
Any public person has to be more aware than anybody else. There are a lot of people that don't respect the rules. They're out there, they don't get noticed, they can get away with that. We are luckier than anybody else because we are still being around the place. We can still do our job and continue with our professions. And we have to bear in mind that everything that we do has other consequences than other people act doesn't. And at the moment, we cannot deliver it down. You know, we're taking some risks to continue playing. We're trying to do the right things. You know, people are sacrificing their lives to help the society in this moment. And what we have to do is just contribute, and don't give any more issues, neither to the public, neither to the government, to make a decision that we don't want.
As for Mesut Ozil's future with Arsenal, Arteta says the German's record is unquestionable, and if he never plays another game for the club, his legacy is sealed. And that is all from me for today and for the week. More sporty news to come. It's back over to you, Sonny. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Gwen, and you have a good weekend, too. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uden.
Yo, 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 sporty greetings, man. I'm Evelyn Akato, forward for the Tigress Nigerian Women's National Team and Flams Carolo Basket. Bonjour, bonjour, my people. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
In National Basketball Association action Thursday night, the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Brooklyn Nets both posted victories. The AP's Dave Ferry reports on their wins, and Dave tips off with the Cavaliers.
Andre Drummond and Larry Nance Jr. led the Cavaliers' offense in a 94-90 victory against the Grizzlies. Drummond had 22 points and 15 rebounds. Nance was 7-for-7 from the field and scoring 18 points.
I needed that. You know, I know I can shoot. My teammates know I can shoot. My coaches know I can shoot. But, you know, it's hard to stay confident in it when, you know, so many of them just rattle out.
Drummond and Nance allowed Cleveland to stop a two-game skid. Jonas Valanciunas led Memphis with 17 points and 10 rebounds.
Just got to bounce back. I don't know, play better offense, play better defense, put more effort in the game. All of us included, me included. Got to be doing a better job.
The Cavaliers were minus leading scorer Colin Sexton, who sat out with a left ankle sprain. Missing their two biggest stars, the Nets earned a 122-109 win over the 76ers as Joe Harris poured in 28 points off the bench and Caris LeVert made the most of a rare start. LeVert fell 3 rebounds shy of a triple-double, delivering 22 points and 10 assists to help Brooklyn drop Philadelphia to 7-2.
The two games I started, Kevin and Kai haven't played, so there's obviously more opportunity out there, more shots, just more, you know, touches. So I think that that definitely has a big part of it.
Nets forward Kevin Durant missed the game because of the NBA's health and safety protocols, while Kyrie Irving was a late scratch due to personal reasons. Shake Milton had a team-high 24 points, and Joel Embiid added 20 with 12 rebounds for the 76ers. I'm Dave Ferry.
Thanks, Dave. Now let's go to Denver, Colorado, where the Dallas Mavericks defeated the Denver Nuggets in an overtime thriller. The AP's Bruce Morton reports from Denver.
Dallas got some clutch overtime hopes from Josh Richardson to emerge with a 124-117 victory over the Nuggets. The Mavs were led by 38 points from Luka Doncic.
The team in these moments got to be a leader on those moments. And I think today we did great. You know, a lot of people hit those clutch shots, and we did great.
Richardson's bucket with 1:57 left in the extra session lifted Dallas up for good at 116-114. Then he added a three-pointer with 1:25 left, making it 119-114, and the Mavericks were on their way. Tying Doncic for scoring honors was the Nuggets' Nikola Jokic, also with 38. Bruce Morton, Denver.
Thanks, Bruce. In two more NBA games Thursday night, the San Antonio Spurs beat the defending champion Los Angeles Lakers 118-109 in Los Angeles. Center LaMarcus Aldridge led San Antonio with 28 points, while LeBron James had 27 points for the Lakers. And the Portland Trail Blazers trounced the visiting Minnesota Timberwolves 135-117. Damian Lillard delivered 39 points for the Blazers. And that wraps up the January 8th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in, and have a nice weekend, everyone. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.